Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
All right, we're just flying through this show already. So, you know, so now we're back to normal. All right, Andy?
What is
back
normal?
Back to normal.
Who decides normal?
Back to normal. Regular rotation. No big deal. I'm going to play you the whole, Gerard Mayo wearing too many hats. But first, are you amazed by the amount of attention that the draft gets?
When I saw, and you were part of this, 750,000
people. 775,000 people in a three-day event.
Like, were they paying people to be there? Were they giving away free beer? Were they...
Okay, so
how did they get people there?
This is the crazy thing.
Did you think it was cool?
Okay. No. No, and I'm just being honest.
Wait a minute. 750,000 people can't be wrong.
Okay, so here's what happens. Okay, so I get the excitement for the first round, okay, but it's 10 minutes between each round. So you saw like where everybody was standing around.
Hart Plaza, right?
Is that what it was called?
Yeah.
Okay, well, there you go. Name recognition. So what happens is they all just, there it is. If you go to Twitch, you can see it. They just mill around in an area. It's not a concert. It's not a Broadway play. It's nothing. It's not a real game. So in the first round, every 10 minutes, somebody comes up, and it's obviously in the first round, it's commissioner. He says a name. Sometimes the player is there. Sometimes it isn't. That guy takes a picture, holds up a jersey, and then he leaves. Okay? Day two and day three is even worse. So day two, they had just as many people as day one. And they just stand there looking at this stage. And then on day two, you got rounds two and three, and you're like, okay, some random dude comes up, he announces a name, and then he leaves. And everyone just stands there looking in the stage. Now, you're not supposed to bring alcohol, but there are some people who bring some beer. It's not like somebody's walking around asking you if you want something to eat. There's no tables. You stand the entire time.
Sounds like my hell.
Here's the thing. I don't understand how they do it. Now, if you go to Twitch and follow WEEI, you'll see the super fans. Those guys have seats. So each team has a certain little area where they have 15 to 20 seats, and those guys dress up like lunatics. But most of the people just randomly stand up looking at a stage.
We have some breaking news.
Oh, we do?
Yes.
Do we need a breaking news?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, hold on. Let's wait for Nick to find it because I don't know what it is.
This is breaking news. Breaking news on WEEI is presented by BetQL. Smarter bets start with BetQL. Download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com today.
So the New England Patriots are betting that defensive tackle Christian Barmore will be a key piece of their defense moving forward. According to Adam Schefter mere moments ago, Christian Barmore and the Patriots reached agreement on a four-year deal with a maximum value of $92 million. And then, as we always have to put in this day and age, the deal was negotiated and confirmed by Nicole Lynn of Clutch Sports. So, Christian Barmore.
I hate that. Why are you adding the agent's name?
Like, I hate
is it,
too.
Oh, I'll give you this information if you say my name.
Quid pro quo.
Stop it.
That's what it is.
Okay, I hate it. All right,
but more importantly, you have locked up Kyle Duggar, and now you have locked up Christian Barmore to be the centerpiece, and obviously Mike Onwenu and some other guys. Yeah, but
and
the
Christian Gonzalez, the centerpiece,
young Christian Gonzalez. But I love this. I think Ramondre Stevenson is probably next in line as they keep the all those people that Bill Belichick draft that sucked that they continue to re-sign. Christian Barmore is going to be the centerpiece of your defense. I love it. And by the way, up to $92 million comes in a little lower than I thought. I thought it would be more like a $90 million deal that would be up to 100
So what do you
something.
Think is his real – what I always try to figure out is what the real number is, and you don't have a – and the real number, honest to God, is your signing bonus. You just call it your guaranteed money.
Yeah.
And your first 2 years.
Right.
Whatever your signing bonus in your first 2 years is, that is your real money. Now do the average annual for that for for 4 years.
So I wonder
– $41.8 million in guarantees per Jeremy Fowler.
Yeah, wow. I'm guessing this is an extension too. I don't know if you found that, if this is a true extension.
Well, he's a second-round pick, so his term –
This is his fourth year after –
So this is it. He doesn't have the fifth-year option like a first-round pick.
So I'm wondering if this is a true extension that kicks in. So you have him for 5 years moving forward – with 40-something million guarantee. I was going to say around $50 million would have been where I would have guessed.
Bill can't draft to save his life, can he?
He drafted a $100 million defensive lineman right here.
Yeah, he did.
I love it. The one question with Barmore, the two questions. I would say he has not totally reached peak potential. I still think some of us believe he has more of like an all-pro caliber potential than he's really reached. And he's had that knee injury that's kind of been just below the surface that he's dealt with over the course of his career, which is always a concern with these long-term big money deals. But he's a great player, and he makes everybody on that defense better. He makes Juwan Bentley better and Jelani Tavai. He's part of the reason you can have some of those guys at that caliber of player behind him. I love it. This defense, certainly. So Jerod Mayo doesn't get necessarily draft picks, right, for his defense, but he's getting to keep all the good players on his defense via contracts.
Yeah, that was a guy that I don't think anyone has an issue with him. I think he's a great personality. I think if Bill was here, here's what you see. If Bill was here, would he have done this? Which
yes.
I think I would like to kind of move away from. Because I heard something really funny this morning on the Greg Hill Show. Some caller called up and, you know, Bill during his, appearance on Pat McAfee, breaking down the draft board and the draft and all the guys, you know, some of the needs were a quarterback, wide receiver, obviously. And they draft all these wide receivers, and the caller's like, yeah, you know, I love it how Bill's like on the Pat McAfee show talking about all the Patriots have needs at wide receivers, but he wouldn't have drafted any of these wide receivers. He would have said that. Now he can acknowledge that there's a need, but based on his draft history with receivers, he probably doesn't draft either one of these guys.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the new age Bill would have looked like trying to move forward, because we're never going to have to play that reality, right? That went out the door. I do think he would have signed Barmore. I do think Barmore is the type of guy he signs. He likes defensive linemen. He obviously valued those throughout his Patriots tenure. And he signed guys that were worthy of being signing. And I think he looks at Barmore as a transformational, makes everybody else better kind of player. Not necessarily, you know, that Deion Branch. When Deion Branch wanted number one receiver money and Bill's like, yeah, but you're not a number one wide receiver. Ship him out, right? But if you're really good, like Barmore is, if you're in that world of dominant defensive linemen, I think he would have paid him. So I think this is a good deal for them. That's lower than I expected.
Well, that's one of those things where
they got Onwenu for lower than I expected. They got Duggar for probably about what I expected. And then to get Barmore for a little bit lower, because these contracts, the kid from Baltimore just signed a massive contract. Quinnen Williams has these D-line contracts have exploded to the $100 million level.
Well, then this must be a situation where he said, listen, you got 1 year left in your contract. We're going to sign you now. We're going to lock you up now. Now, sure. Listen, you could have a monster year and you could outperform this extension that we're going to give you. Or you could just, you know.
You could miss 12 games because of that knee issue.
Exactly.
And if you hit free agency coming off 12 games missed.
And that is one of those things where, like, I take the money personally. If I know I have an injury history, like, I'm just not even questioning it. $41 million guaranteed no matter what I do.
That's lottery. That's generational wealth.
All right, so the draft, it is what it is. It's over. But I wanted to bring this up real quickly because and we'll play more of this at 1 o'clock because Jerod Mayo was on the Greg Hill Show. And he talked for a lot. And first of all, like, I think he's doing an excellent job. When I think about like the way he's handling the media, when I think about how he's answering questions, how he's admitting that he's wrong, how he's you know getting excited. So he talks about like burning cash. He talked about all that stuff, but that's not the clip I want to play. This is something that you picked up on when you heard Wiggy asked a question about hats. And here you go.
You know, obviously they know you when you were a player, now as a coach. How do you balance those two, that balancing act of, all right, I'm going to put my player's hat on here to coach the team versus I got now my coach's hat on?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to have my coach's hat on for the majority of the time. What I will say is, you know, especially on the defensive side of the ball, taking some of those philosophies that we had on the defensive side of the ball and really spreading it through the rest of the team. Look, we brought in 17 new coaches, all with great energy, but they also have to be firm. Like, we have things that we need to get done. Accountability amongst the players is always a big thing. Whether you have a player hat on or coach's hat, we're all responsible. And our job as coaches are to put those guys in the right place so they can go out there and make plays. I always say, look, here's your canvas. I don't care what picture you paint on the canvas, just stay on the canvas. And as long as we do that, I think we'll be going in the right direction.
So this probably makes a lot of sense.
What's your problem with hats?
Bill Belichick, as Steve Belichick famously told us a couple of years ago, still wears all the hats in this organization, right? Right up till the end, Bill wore every hat. So it probably makes a lot of sense with Bill gone. All the people that are left have no idea which hat there's, but they all grabbed a few of the hats that fell off Bill's head as he walked out the door. So I have to hear Robert Kraft say, well, putting on my fan hat. Nope, you're not a fan. Sorry, Robert. You lost the ability to be a fan when you bought the team, and the team turned into a $7, $8 billion, whatever the hell. Nope, you're an owner. And now, Gerard Mayo, you aren't a player. You don't have a player hat anymore. Don't put your player hat on. At all times, I don't know how much money you're making, but I do know this. Robert Kraft liked you so much, he signed you to be the head coach while Bill was still the head coach. And that may have been off-putting to Bill Belichick, right? That may have been a flaw, a little hair across his bum.
You think he had an issue with it once he found out about it?
Yeah, I don't think he liked it.
People who were loyal to him had an issue with it when they found out about it?
I don't think they liked it.
Created silos and, you know, and little groups of people bitching and complaining?
Yeah.
Wow, how funny.
When you bring
in
somebody's replacement and make it obvious, I think it creates issues. I think we saw it with the Boston Red Sox. Hey, Trevor Story is your new second baseman. For now, wink, wink, Xander, get the hell out, even though you had a conversation together. Nobody likes to have their replacement sitting next to them. That no one does. Unless you're like 97 and you know you're done. Your time is over.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
I met a guy recently who told me that he spends roughly $250,000 a month. I talked to another person recently who made $50 million at the age of 30. What do you do with that money? How do you spend it? How do you not spend it? What do you invest in? If you meet a rich person, these are questions everyone wants to know, but you're too embarrassed to ask. That's the whole premise of MoneyWise. We talk to real people who have made a significant amount of money, and we ask them all about their finances. My name's Sam Parr, and the podcast is called MoneyWise. That's one word, MoneyWise. You can find MoneyWise wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Andy, I love having this guy on. He's just so smart, and he's tied into everything, and he's constantly monitoring all these college players, and we're lucky enough to be joined by Jim Nagy, executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl. Jim, how you doing? You're on with Andy Hart, and obviously you know who I am. How you doing this morning?
I'm good. I'm good, fellas. Good to be back on.
So I guess quick question before we get started, because obviously the Patriots drafted eight guys. I think they had 10 undrafted guys also. You had four of these guys at the Senior Bowl with you, so you were able to monitor them, check them out, evaluate them as much as anybody. Overall, like, any big surprises from the draft? Anything surprise you stand out to you during the draft?
I mean, there were some players that, you know, always surprise you a little bit here and there, then go a little higher or lower, but like, no major shocks. I think teams are doing a better job I guess there seems like more consensus. There's only a couple teams in my mind that feel like go rogue a little bit on draft weekend. But no, there wasn't anything major, really. I know everyone's been talking about the Michael Penix thing, but that wasn't a huge shocker to me. I know that they'd loaded up the owner's plane, Mr. Blank's plane, and went to Washington. And teams don't usually do that unless they're really serious about a guy.
Jim, before we get to the guys you had in your game, I know you keep track of all these guys. You know who Drake May is, what his skills are. And you and I have talked about this before. In an ideal world, rookie quarterbacks would probably redshirt and sit, but we don't live in an ideal world. We live in a real world. Is Drake May capable of playing early on this fall? Because there seems to be this idea that, oh, he needs to sit for at least a year or you might break him.
Yeah, he's capable of it, but is it best case scenario? No. I mean, I was texting with Drake's quarterbacks coach after the draft, and I said he's going to a great spot. I mean, I've known Jacoby. I scouted Jacoby when he came out. There's no better mentor to be going in the league under than Jacoby Brissett. It's not my team. They're going to do whatever they want to do, but I think a great plan would be to let Jacoby start the season. And then, if things go awry and it's kind of a lost year, well, then get Drake on the field late, get him some game reps going into year two, and then roll him out there next year. I think that's best case scenario. Unfortunately, as a league, we don't do that anymore. You know, in the two recent cases where we've done it, in Patrick Mahomes and Jordan Love, it looks like it's going to work out really well for it's already worked out well for Mahomes. It looks like, you know, Jordan Love's going to be a superstar as well. So to me, that would be the plan. But yeah, is he physically capable? Yeah. And the thing I love about Drake is that I don't think outside pressure, expectations like a New York or a Boston market is going to get to this kid. And I only say that it was a small takeaway. I golfed with him after the Senior Bowl. He was training down here for the draft with the same guy that Bo Nix was training with. And I think you guys might agree. You can tell a lot from a guy on a golf course over 18 holes. We kind of show who we are. And Drake's just got a really cool demeanor about him where like stuff doesn't really affect him. So had the Giants or Jets drafted him, like I think he could have handled that market. So I wouldn't like protect Drake. I don't think Drake needs to be protected. I just think it's better for all these guys if they can sit a little bit and learn.
So just real quick, I know I want to get into these players that you had at the Senior Bowl, but when you see these guys have been doing this for a while, even before you were the executive director of the Senior Bowl, you were a scout in the NFL. Have you noticed any traits that would lead you to believe that, or like an indicator that one guy is more prepared than another guy to start right away? Or is it just like you're not going to know until the third week in camp?
I guess if I had to answer that, I would say I like to dig into like their situational football, how they play in certain third down situations, red zone situations when things are sped up. You can tell when a guy's ready, but I think it usually correlates to the number of starts they have in college. You know, you look at some of the guys that haven't panned out recently. They've been taken based off their physical traits more than the experience in the football they've played. I just think quarterbacks played so much from the neck up. I think during the pre-draft process, we just get enamored with some of the physical stuff. I think we've all seen that. I mean, just shoot. I mean, look at Tom. I mean, Tom had good physical tools, but he was, you know, incredible from the neck up, and that's why he was Tom. But yeah, I would say that if you're looking at it, just game experience, situational football, those are probably the best indicators. And then just the overall maturity of the kid. Does he come across like a grown up, or does he come across like a kid that's typical kid that's just leaving college and has to grow up a little bit? So
using that as a leaping off point, I think one of the more interesting prospects the Patriots drafted was wide receiver Javon Baker, Alabama level talent, great year last year at UCF. Anyone who saw his introductory press conference, he certainly has a lot of energy and is a quote machine. Is this a guy that has growing up to do? Is this a boom or bust prospect? Because it seems like there's sort of a volatile nature to his scouting report.
No, I don't think it's boom or bust. I'll just take you in behind the scenes a little bit on scouting Javon for us. I was at an Auburn, Georgia game, kind of like early, middle of the year. And we've got a scout that does that part of the country, does a great job. But I was in the press box, and that's one of the values of us going to games every Saturday as a staff, is that we run into buddies we worked with in the league. And so I was just asking him, I'm like, you know, I've seen Florida, I've seen Miami, I've seen Florida State. Like, do any of those smaller schools in Florida have any guys? You know, FAU, FIU, USF, UCF, and like three of the guys sitting around me, they all brought up Baker. And the thing was, their question was, can he run? They thought he may be like a 4.6 guy. Well, he doesn't play like that on tape. That's what I told him. I'm like, I don't know where you guys are getting that. I don't know if like the strength coach is telling you he might be speed deficient, but I certainly don't see that on the tape. The thing I love about Javon is he can get open, which, you know, the Patriots haven't been drafting receivers lately that can get open. He can uncover, and he's got phenomenal ball skills. So he's, you know, a lot of people thought he was going to go on day two. He goes on day early day three, and I thought that was really good value where they got him.
Is the comp for him Jacoby Myers? That's been the comp, I feel like. Whenever somebody says this guy's not very fast, and again, we're talking to Jim Nagy, executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl. When somebody says he's not very fast, but he can get open, I think of Jacoby Myers. Like, real clever, understands voids, leverage, you know, the whole nonverbal cue at the top of the route. Is that something? Is that an adequate comp?
I see it a little differently. We had Jacoby too. I thought he was going to be a fourth round pick that year. Shocked me he went undrafted. Obviously, I think he's probably the best receiver the Patriots have acquired on a draft weekend in a long time. I was surprised they let him walk, but Jacoby was the crafty guy. He was longer than Baker, longer bodied guy, super crafty, setting stuff up. And then his ball skills were, that's maybe the comparison. And Jacoby's were unreal because he was a former quarterback, and his ability to make contested plays like in traffic, you don't find that with many like natural receivers, let alone guys that had to switch positions. But to me, this guy's gets open a little more with like quickness at the top of a route, whereas Jacoby, I think, was just more of the savvy guy, knowing how to stem guys and set guys up. To me, that would be the difference. But the ball skills are certainly similar.
So when I say Joe Milton, what do you respond with? Because he looks physically like one of the more gifted athletes probably you could find anywhere at any position on the planet, but they already drafted a quarterback with the third overall pick. So what should I be looking for from Joe Milton this summer?
The biggest arm you've seen since Rohan Davey. That's what I would say.
I played with him.
I remember one year in camp when we had him, and he threw a ball in a team period. He rolled one or two directions and threw back across the field. And I remember the coaching, you know, it went like 84 yards in the air. It was one of the most unbelievable throws I've ever seen in my life. Joe's the same way. Joe had a throw at the Manning camp last summer when I was there during a skills competition, and he got it out there like 84, 85 yards without even straining. So this guy's got elite arm, arm strength. And, he's been around a lot. This guy's been around good people at Michigan. He was, you know, kind of learned under Hendon Hooker at Tennessee. So he's been around good coaches. He's been around other good players. Is there still some like developmental qualities to him? Sure. Because you look at the amount of starts, he hasn't had a huge amount of starts. He's a little developmental, and they can be patient with him because they just took Drake May. So, you know, if you take a guy where they took Joe, and in 2 years you've got a number two quarterback you feel good about, that's a heck of a draft pick. You know, even 3 years from now, if he's year three for the next couple of years, and then in year three he's a legit number two you feel like you can win games with if Drake goes down, that's a really good day three pick.
Yeah, you know, for me, Jim, I always hated the guys with who were, you know, the super strong arm. Because sometimes I felt like they only had one speed, whether I was 5 yards away or 10 yards away. I felt like the ball was coming. Like, now it's the way Rohan was. Davey was, I mean, God forbid you're doing a bootleg or a naked, because they wouldn't do them with Brady, but Rohan was it. They let Rohan do the bootlegs. I was like, uh-oh, here it comes low and away, fast and away. And it was on a rope, just like a curveball hitting the dirt.
Yeah, that's all those young guys struggle with that. I remember a buddy of mine, Jeff Thomason, who played in the league when you were a Christian, and he went to he was in Green Bay with me my first job in the league, and then he goes to Philly and they draft Donovan McNabb. I remember having that conversation. I'm like, how's Donovan? He's like, man, he's going to be good, but he's got to learn a changeup, man. He is killing me on these shallow crossers.
Take a little bit off when I'm closer. I know, you know, a lot of people don't like, I know the other guy you had was, you had Laydon Robinson, guard, fourth round pick. And I know nobody really likes to talk about offensive linemen, but is that a guy that is a developmental guy taken in the fourth round? You think maybe he's got a chance to play, contribute a little bit?
He's got a chance to play. I think he'll push for a starting job right away. We got on Laydon a couple years ago. You know, he was a junior. We only could start bringing juniors this year. up until this year, we could bring him if they graduate. And he was going to graduate a couple years ago. So we looked at him. We went down the road. At the last minute, he kind of decided to stay in school. He had a really good 2021 year, kind of a down 2022, and then played better this year. And he was honestly, guys, like, I try to pump the guys up that have a really good week in Mobile, and they're just, I run out of days and minutes in the day trying to run a business and promote these players. But Layden had an unbelievable week in Mobile after I went back and looked at the tape. What you'll find is he plays really stout and square. It's hard to power through these guys' edges, and he's got really strong hands. He's one of those guys who will grip you out when he gets his hands on you. So, you know, he's probably a guard only, right? And the reason it tells me that I think the Patriots probably see him as a starter is that I don't think he can play center, and I don't think he can play tackle, and you're certainly not in the business of drafting one position backup offensive lineman. You know, just from like a role perspective, if you just saw Layden Robinson as a backup, you probably wouldn't have drafted him in the fourth round. You maybe drafted him in the seventh. So just, you know, conceptually of the player, that kind of tells me where their mindset was. I'm guessing they see him as a guy that can come in and at least push for a starting job this year or be a starter next year.
Jim, obviously football's a world where you don't have to be a top 10 pick at receiver to be an impact young player. We've seen just boatloads of guys come in as second, third, fifth round picks, Puka Nacua, and have instant impacts. Do you see either Jalen Polk or Javon Baker or both of them as potential impact offensive weapons for a team that obviously has struggled to fill out the receiver depth chart in recent years?
On that team, yes. Yeah, I think they're going to have roles. I would certainly think so with looking at the depth chart, what it was pre-draft. Well, I like Polk a lot. He's a really good player. You know, we reached out to him after the national championship game. We lost a couple of Washington and Michigan guys because they played so late this year. But Polk was a guy I really liked, and I'll share this too. When I went to the combine, I was timing 40s around, you know, where all the teams time the 40s. I was kind of across the aisle from a bunch of buddies. And when Polk came up to run, there was a lot of chatter just with it, you know, and there's probably four or five teams right there where we were sitting. And there was a lot of chatter about how much everyone liked Polk, and no one wanted him to run fast because they wanted him to, they wanted to get him at a discount, but they all really liked the football player. They could care less what he ran in the 40. That's kind of what their mindset was. Like, I don't care how fast this guy runs. I'd rather he runs slow so we can get him. But I would put it this way. He was a more popular guy in the league than he probably was in the media.
Interesting. Jim Nagy, last one real quick, because I know you got to go, because I just saw this tweet that you had yesterday. I think it was yesterday. It says, for all non-casuals, 2025 draft coverage starts today, no days off. And then you list 16 quarterbacks that I guess you're kind of paying attention to. And one of the guys on that we were talking about was Shedeur Sanders. Out of that group, is there a guy that you think has the greatest upside, or is it just too early, Jim?
Well, shoot, man, we've seen a lot. We've looked at a lot more. We've graded more than that. They just wouldn't fit in the picture.
Yeah.
I'm not in the office right now. I'm actually still up in Michigan. I was up here for the draft, and I'm visiting my parents right now. This is my home state. But, yeah, our guy, our DFO in the office took that picture, and there was too many. It wouldn't fit. I'm like, you got to take some names off. So we've dug in on those guys. It's going to be a fun group. Really, the only guy that I've done a lot of work on was Carson Beck from Georgia. Had he come out this year, we would have invited him to the Senior Bowl. Probably would have been a day two pick. Had he come out this year, second, third round, I would guess. And then I saw him in the spring game over at Georgia a couple weeks ago, and he was impressive. He's going to have a good year. So it's going to be Shedeur. It's going to be Beck. Quinn Ewers at Texas, I would guess. Riley Leonard at Notre Dame, maybe. And there's always, you know, a guy or two. You know, look what Jaden Daniels has done over the last couple of years, rising up. Joe Burrow, Kenny Pickett, Mac Jones. I mean, there's always guys that kind of, you know, come alive late in their careers. That's going to happen with a couple of those guys.
Jim, can you answer real quick before you let you go here? A philosophical question Christian and I had yesterday from a team or scouting perspective. When you host one of these elite prospects to a dinner on their visit to the facility, is it okay if they order a beer or an alcoholic beverage with dinner?
Ooh. That's totally based on the GM. I will say that. I won't name names, but I know some of my buddies would not give a rip, and there's other ones that might look sideways at them. But I think it just depends on the decision maker.
So probably safe not to do it.
Safer not to?
Safe not to do it because there's an unknown.
Right. Yeah. I was going to say, if I was an agent and I was advising a player, I would probably advise against that. We actually, one of the teams I worked for, we brought a guy in the 30 visit, and he came down for dinner. He ordered basically the entire menu, and I was like, something's going on here. And then he was late to show up for the shuttle that brought him over to the facility the next day. And we went over, we sent scouting assistants over there to pick him up 3 different times, finally got him. They went up to his room, there's weed all over his room. Oh. So you definitely don't smoke weed on your visit. Don't do that.
Okay. Oh, my God.
You need to write a book, Jim. That's what's next, man. Just change all the names to protect the innocent. And those are the stories I want to hear. Like the scout that's working the beat and going to these schools and hosting these players. Like, when you open their door, what do you see? And are you a little apprehensive to open the door? Oh, great stuff, Jim.
Yeah, that was an all-timer.
All right, Jim. Well, listen, thanks, Jim. Enjoy your family. Enjoy Michigan. We'll talk to you down the road. Thanks again, man. Appreciate you.
You got it, guys.
All right, so that's Jim Nagy, executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl.
We're at the Ford Clubhouse Studios here at Fenway Park. Arcand comes your way at 12:35 with Red Sox pregame. Sox looking to sweep the San Francisco Giants again. Pregame in about 33 minutes from now. Let's talk some NBA. The Celtics have done their part. Now they sit and wait. And joining us is Odyssey NBA insider Danny Green. Our insider calls are brought to you by the all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe, equipped for adventure. Multiple-time NBA champion Danny Green, once again with Gresham Fauria. Danny, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good, man. How you guys doing, man? Good afternoon.
We're great. We're a little nervous, though, because of Kristaps Porzingis' injury. So why don't we start there? If Porzingis is compromised the rest of the way, Danny, how much of a problem is that for the Celtics in trying to win an NBA championship without Zinger?
Yeah, I mean, if he's gone for the rest of the postseason, that's going to be tough. But I wouldn't worry too much if he's just gone for this next series. I think the next series you guys can get through without him. It gets tricky when you get to the Eastern Conference Finals and you match up with one of those teams like the New York Knicks or the Philadelphia 76ers. That's where it's going to get tough. Not to take away from those other teams in Cleveland and Orlando. Very good teams, but I don't see any one of them beating those groups. So, yeah, next year I think you guys should be fine. But, yeah, in the third round and then the finals, you're going to need him for sure. So, hopefully he heals up soon. But I think he'll be back. I don't know how serious the strain is, but hopefully he'll be back by the Eastern Conference Finals and it should be okay.
So have you ever played with anybody or had a similar injury like Porzingis has, like the whole lower calf strain?
Actually, yeah, I have had one myself. I had a calf strain the year that we lost to Atlanta when they went to the Eastern Conference Finals in Game 3. We were up 2-1, and they ended up winning the series. This was the Game 7 that we lost at home. We were right at the big deal with Ben, and this was Ben's last game in Philly, Ben Simmons. So, yeah, I had a calf strain, and I could have probably made it back by the finals. I don't know if I would have made the next round. Mine was a grade 2 because it was two grade 1s, basically two small tears that were two grade 1s, ended up being a grade 2. But yes, it's not an easy injury to get over. It could take 2 or 3 weeks depending on how bad it is or how light it is, or it could take 4 to 6 weeks depending on how serious. But
it's not something you like. It's not like a, hey, let me just tough through this, right? Like if it grabs you, it grabs you. It's not something like you can like shoot it up and I can go.
No, it's something you can't really walk or move. Like I said, I felt like my Achilles was going at the time. It's something that takes time to heal, and mentally it takes some time to get over and have to not think about pushing off and moving. So, but I said hopefully he'll be back in the next series, maybe not the second round, but probably at least by the third round, and he'll be healthy, hopefully at full health, because you're going to need him to win the championship.
Insider calls brought to you by the all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe, equipped for adventure with capable features like available H-Track all-wheel drive and standard third-row seating. Odyssey NBA insider Danny Green with us for a few more minutes here with Gresham Fauria. The downtime in between series, how important is it even for grizzled young vets like Tatum and Brown? And what have you found to be some of the best uses of these time in between series? Like, do you want to be coached? Do you want to get in the lab and start looking at film? Or do you need a couple of days for maybe a mental break at this point in the season?
You might need a day or two, but it's perfect. It's very important, especially for a team that has bumps and bruises and trying to get healthy and letting those guys heal. But it lets you to, you know, resharpen your mind and watch some games and to kind of, you know, refocus, recalibrate everything. So I think it's huge for all players, especially ones that are banged up and teams that are banged up. So that, you know, it's good that you guys have, you know, take care of business the way you're supposed to, and you get a couple extra days.
Hey, who do you think had the best series for the Celtics? Who do you think played the best? If you were going to give an MVP award
probably
out.
Derek White? Probably Derek White. Yeah, especially the last two games, he for sure did. Jalen played really well also. But Derek White, I think, might have been the most consistent. But I guess the expectation is not as high on him as it is for Jason or Jalen. But I would have to give it to D. White.
Yeah, you know, the one thing since you mentioned Jaylen Brown, we're talking to Danny Green, The concern I see with him is like his free throws. He was 9 of 20 for the series, and every time he misses, I feel like he misses it the exact same way, front end of the rim. Sometimes I feel like he's going to airball it. Potential problems. Is that what he's going to do? Nothing but free throws?
I would assume so. I'm sure he's locked in on it. And sometimes it's just a mental thing. It's a series that you might mentally have like a small block. But I'm sure he'll be better next time around. But you said there's a concern. You have a concern about it?
Well, my concern would be, okay, those are the points that you're going to need against a really good team when the difference 100%. Isn't like the Heat. It's like the Nuggets, you know, because, you know, they're not going to let you just run away with it.
As you've seen, in every series, they're very important. And you've seen the Philadelphia-New York Knicks series, the free throws is what lost both those teams' games, you know. Philly lost game 2, where they let it slip away, and then New York lost game 5, but they let it slip away. So free throws are huge. If New York makes their free throws, series over. If Philly makes their free throws, it might be a different series. So free throws are important in every series, especially as you go further down the stretch. But I'm sure that this is where these extra days help recalibrate that, the mental focus and lock in and just not only rest your body, but you know, get your muscle memory back with small things like free throws.
All right, last thing for Danny Green, Odyssey NBA Insider. Who would be the tougher matchup for the Celtics, the Cleveland Cavaliers or the Orlando Magic?
I think Orlando would match up better than Cleveland. It's also depending on how Cleveland's health is, because, you know, Jared Allen is out right now, and he has some size. But with him out, it's just Evan Mobley there, and I don't know if they have any other backup bigs. But, yes, Orlando has bigger wings. Jonathan Isaac, Franz Wagner, Paolo Mancaro, like they have those guys that are bigger bodies that can guard Jason and Jalen. But no Porzingis. So those guys are probably the tougher or the more fitting matchup. I think Cleveland is a good team, but the wings are a lot smaller when you have John Darius. So it's a tougher matchup for them to guard Jason and Jalen. But I would have to guess Orlando would be a tougher matchup. Roster-wise, but they might not win the series. So, you know, you might not get Orlando because Cleveland might be the better team in the series.
Danny, thanks for the time and the breakdown. We always appreciate it. We'll catch up with you soon. Thank you.
For sure. I appreciate you guys.
There you go.
Man. Thank you.
Thanks, Danny.
There we go. Odyssey NBA Insider Danny Green. Insider calls brought to you by the all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe, equipped for adventure. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/AcrossAmerica.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
I met a guy recently who told me that he spends roughly $250,000 a month. I talked to another person recently who made $50 million at the age of 30. What do you do with that money? How do you spend it? How do you not spend it? What do you invest in? If you meet a rich person, these are questions everyone wants to know, but you're too embarrassed to ask. That's the whole premise of MoneyWise. We talk to real people who have made a significant amount of money, and we ask them all about their finances. My name's Sam Parr, and the podcast is called MoneyWise. That's one word, MoneyWise. You can find MoneyWise wherever you get your podcasts.